days, and I know fans are going, oh, Shane, it's early days. You know, I don't expect to come here to the first game of the season to be beaten 3-0 by a side like Brighton. To be olayed by Brighton on 80 minutes, you know you're doing something severely fucking wrong. No, you don't expect that. There are some things in football you do kind of, you know, you expect. To be olayed by the Brighton fans, we're Brighton and Hove Albion, and we're taking the piss at the Vic on the first day. Are you fucking serious?
Hello and welcome to episode 138 of Together BHA. New era, new year, who dis? We have got two new co-hosts to the show. What a great match to be coming in on. We've got 6 points out of six. But first of all, let's kind of talk about Watford after the fact, because we do have the two new co-hosts that I was talking about last week. You all know why it's happening, so I'm not going to get too much into that. But Craig and Adam, welcome to the show. You are now permanent fixtures. If one of you wants to lead off with kind of introducing yourself with whatever you want to add, please feel free.
Craig, I'll let you go.
Oh, you're too kind. No, thank you so much. It's like you said, it's a great one to be coming in on. Brighton born and raised, but actually a US expat at the moment. So I moved out to Chicago, Illinois, January of last year, just before the world came to a grinding halt. But now getting to see all the stateside seagulls and follow it from afar. So it's been really good to see so many people tuning in, especially this side of the pond, and seeing it all. I was slightly too young for the Goldstone, but started at the Wiv Dean and carried on throughout that. I credit my family for the whole Brighton situation and getting me into it from a young age, and I just haven't stopped since. Thank you for having me and Adam, Josh as well. Hopefully we can continue what you've already built here.
I'm a little bit worried that you said we're permanent fixtures. This could be absolutely unmitigated disaster. You've got to claw that back. Hey, everyone.
I'll cut that out.
We'll edit it. I'm based out of the US as well. We've got the whole expat crew here. I'm just outside of New York City. Been here for about 10 years, but I spent the prior 7-8 years in Brighton before that. So I went to Sussex Uni. So I was right there as they were putting the finishing touches on the Yamex at Falmer. And that was pretty much my exposure. I did a couple of games at the Wiv Dean, which is memorable to say the least. And really my years for the club in terms of building up a founder was under Gus. So that's where I came into the fray. But I was thinking the other day, we're thinking about how to do an intro to this, thinking about where did I start with football. And my first memory of being a football fan was the Merlin Premier League 1994 sticker book, which I still have in the spare room at my mum's. So that's going back. Oldham Athletic were in the Premier League that year, just as a heads up. Anyway, so I've been Brighton obsessed for about since about 2009, I would say. So here we are. The fandom is keeping up in the US.
Yeah, and that was a big factor as well, right? Like when I was speaking to everybody, and again, thank you to like the 17 people that reached out. That was a nice extra job I had for a week. So I appreciate everybody reaching out. But the idea of having three people all over here and experiencing the same thing that we have to experience every week, you know, like sometimes it's great, and then sometimes I just get like major homesickness at specific moments when I get all my friends over there and they're all like, oh, this is happening. And this week was one of them. Everybody was doing their kind of home ritual that we used to have for years and years, and now it's all gone away. And this was a big one. So it's nice to have all of us kind of dealing with it in the same time, in different ways. And what a way to start the podcast with all three of us. I don't know about you all, but I was expecting opening three games of the season prior to the international break. I would have been happy with 4 or 5 points. Drawing away at Burnley, always tough to go to Burnley, especially their first home game ever. Beat Watford, who knows what Everton turns up. And we're already on 6. So what a great start.
Yeah. You can't really write it better. I think the biggest turnaround that you have to think just in terms of is it luck or is it just getting our of dividends, really, is that last year we had so many of these like kind of fixtures, like your Burnley aways and your Watford at homes, let's say, where you should win that game or you should be able to get a point at Burnley. And we would just end up having the old 65% possession, 1,000 chances, an XG of 2.5 or whatnot, and then we'd come away with nothing. That feels like the biggest change. That's such a welcome alteration in our luck that we're now sat on 6 points. And what are we after the games today? Are we still with third now in the league, right?
Third with Chelsea winning.
We'll take it.
I mean, you can't say anything more than it's just a very good start. I mean, you had a rogue first half against Burnley, but otherwise all of the three halves that we've had otherwise have been assured, confident, and I think, Adam, you're right, like just clinical in terms of, you know, being able to put those chances away and control the game, especially yesterday. And like you said, not, you know, overpowering the XG and missing 20 to 25 chances. it's very much a case of, okay, let's control the game, take our chances. And yeah, this time last year, we wouldn't have won these games, I don't think. Yeah. And I think that's the clear difference here.
And I think the other thing that you just touched on is perfect to lead off as well, is that the rogue half at Burnley really was appalling to watch. It was just so disheartening to see that lineup. And we've spoke about it before, you know, when we all kind of started chatting to each other and just how bad it was. And I think from the minute we set out against Watford, I don't know about you, but it was a real sigh of relief to see players playing where I feel they generally should be playing, their positions that they've played for the last X amount of years. That was a nice relief to see that.
Yeah, the alteration between how Adam Webster played in the first half, especially against Burnley, compared to his performance overall, but the first half, let's say, against Watford, was just unbelievable. It felt like every move started with him just waltzing out of the back, putting on, he was spraying passes over to the left-hand side of the field. Incredibly assured performance. And that was just such a stark difference from what we saw for a decent chunk of Burnley. Part of it down, you've got to probably say to Watford, honestly, feeling that they were probably completely asleep for 45 minutes. That was appalling from them, but we'll take it. I mean, that was just, if Potter could probably create a first half game plan and execution, it was that first half. It was just passes in between people on the right-hand side, Webster out to Gross, off to Trossard. And it was just that over and over and over and over again. Incredible stuff.
And that's the bit there that I really noticed in that first half was the 5-3-2, obviously, and tactically Watford getting it wrong. They trying to drop in with Gross, and then Trossard picks up in the middle, almost like, I hate the term of a false nine, but someone that's in that attacking midfielder role to pick up where they're looking to, you know, overload the wings for them just to recede and then come back. So Trossard picking him up in the middle, then keeping him guessing with the Webster over the top for Morpé means that they never settled at that 45 minutes. Constantly, you know, either we go down the wing and you double us up and then we'll just go through the middle or vice versa. And I think we'll pick up on it in a lot more detail, but I think tactically, Potter couldn't have written it out better, like you said, but also there's an onus on the Watford manager not changing anything there in that 45 minutes where they just didn't do anything and they just let it happen. And you go in a comfortable 2-goal lead at halftime and we just managed the game from there.
There was, I think that biggest shift that Potter made to change things up, and again, you might disagree, but he made the mistake, in my opinion, of Bissouma was further forward in the first half against Burnley and it just doesn't allow him to play his game. Now, second half against Burnley, this game against Watford, I mean, he is absolutely mercurial. Like, he dictated everything when he sits a little bit deeper. And we played both him and Lallana deeper against Watford, and they just completely ran things. And as I mentioned before, like, everything was pushed down the right-hand side. I felt bad a little bit for McAllister and Solly March in the first half against Watford. But they just weren't included. It was all down the right-hand side. But, you know, if it works, it works.
And I think that was mildly intentional, I think, don't you? I think the key piece of the game plan was, and as there's an added cherry on top too, I think part of the game plan was to isolate and totally take Saar out of the game as much as possible.
Correct.
And given the fact that we played all the way down that side, dominated possession, it had the desired effect. He had nothing to do. And like you said, like, it sucked a little bit for McAllister and March because they were kind of left out there to do that job. But on the right-hand side, you know, we also had that cherry on top of Ken Sema being the man out there. And he was the man that Graham Potter made. He came through with Potter in Sweden and he got the big move because Potter developed him. So if there's a man that you want just as that added extra, he knows him inside out. He knows exactly how to game plan for him. So all he needed to do really was make sure Saar couldn't do anything. And he already knows everything he needs to do about Sema. And it worked, an absolute treat. It was just a masterclass.
Yeah, there were some moments in that first half where he honestly was just looking around, just in terms of what am I meant to do with this? Like, and I think obviously the UK viewers have a very different commentary than we do. But with Graham Lasso picking up on the tactical switch there in terms of, you know, every choice that he made was going to be a lose-lose situation. And focusing everything down the right, you know, cancelling out that Saar effect that Watford do rely upon does mean that, every decision that he made was wrong because it's either going through the middle or it's going down the right wing. And again, I'll go back to it that, you know, if I was a Watford fan, I'd be expecting something to change fairly quickly. Instead, they let it continue for 45 minutes and then waited to the half. I think, like you said, Potter couldn't have drawn it up better, to be honest.
Can I be also now sort of Grim Reaper on it a little bit? In that the disappointing part was for the goals, obviously set piece, then we'll talk about Duffy, I'm sure. Fantastic. Amazing to see him. Well, the performances he's been putting in this last two games and that goal. What else? As if we'd have expected that after his season at Celtic. But they gifted us a goal outside of the header. That other one was just, I mean, Basuma pounced on it, but it was sort of a freebie. And the worry there with this, we've got a set piece goal and a freebie, is that we dominated that first half. You cannot dominate a team more. And for us to score, it needed to be a set piece and a bit of a freebie with a bad distribution from central defence from their side. So that's the only thing that worried me a little bit. I think overall, our shot percentages were about 3 out of 13 of our shots were on target. We're still not quite there. So that's the only thing that makes me a little bit worried is we go into the next game. Is that still going to be the case? Or are we going to improve? Especially now Mopai is probably going to be out for X amount of time.
I will say, to counter that a little bit, the Southampton game today against United, I felt it was almost a carbon copy of the Watford mistake that fell to Adam Armstrong, and he did not finish it. Everybody said it was a great save from De Gea, but watching it back, actually, it was just really poor from Armstrong. He just hammered it straight at him almost. And I think this time last year, Mopai does that. I think he probably misses it. So like at Premier League level, it should be a gimme. It should be an easy treat, like easy peasy, here's the second goal. But I think this time last year, that was one of our biggest problems. We were just talking about the XG stuff. Like, there's no way we should miss that. But this year we bagged, and the Saints, unfortunately for them, today they didn't, and they came away with a point. And you know, they probably could have took all three against a very poor looking United side a lot of the game today. And I think that's where we've got to hope that difference persists, right? Like, instead of it being like last year where the majority of our chances ended up like Aaron Connolly's in the second half, where he gets it into the box, it falls to his feet, and he somehow manages to put it wide 6 yards out in the middle of the goal. That was just unbelievable. But Mopai, I know Potter said it's days, not weeks. So that was something that I heard that was pretty reassuring from Potter's mouth. Do you think, I know we're getting well ahead of ourselves, but do you think Mopai is the answer after two goals in two games? D- do you think that we're now reverting to the mean in terms of XG and he may actually be good enough? Or do you think that you would still like to see reinforcements?
Craig, jump in as well. But what's plan B after Mopay? So obviously we've got Welbeck coming back, hopefully. But, you know, he's always been in this, sometimes he plays, sometimes he doesn't, situation with injuries. So it's hard to fully rely on Welbeck. And then your answer is, your plan B is Connolly, or we give Andy Sagiri, a guy who's not really been given a vote of confidence. So I think from a pure depth perspective, even if Mopay is the guy, and he is, and from what he's done in the last two games, he's been fantastic, by the way. And I think you're right. Last year, maybe he doesn't finish that gimme chance. But are we going to be at a, it's a long season. It's a very long season. And can we rely on what we have from a depth standpoint? That will be my question.
That is the depth thing with relation to consistency as well, is that, you know, last year Mopay, you know, flew out the gate. You know, he did get 8 goals last season, you know, in the Premier League. It's not that bad, but they all came in that first half of the season. And I think Mopay's issue isn't around the talent. We know that he can finish and we know that he's got it in him. It's whether he can do it for the entirety of the season that remains to be seen. I mean, I personally, again, you know, people can, you know, disagree with me, but in terms of, I do think he's good enough and I do think he has the talent to score 10 to 15 goals a season. It's just whether he can keep that consistency up. And 2 in 2 games is a great start, but let's see where he goes with these other games. You know, we're playing against teams that we should be expecting points from, you know, as this season progresses, especially in the next 5 games. It's going to be really interesting to see, firstly, if it is days and not weeks. Potter, you know, isn't going to give anything away anyway, so we shouldn't read into that too much. But in terms of, you know, let's see if he can do it. Because as Adam said, we can't rely on Welbeck and Connolly, and we'll get to Connolly later. But in terms of, I don't think we can rely on those two as much as we can for Mopay. And I think that's where the striker conversation has happened throughout this entirety of transfer window, with 9 days left.
I mean, it's entirely fair. I mean, you've got an injured Danny Welbeck and not particularly great options after that. Before we get onto the actual players themselves, because the Brighton performance, I think we can all agree, was pretty much the perfect performance in terms of a team base. The stats were great, right? It's everything you want to see. Dominated possession, dominated just about in every faucet of the stats that you can see online. And it was what you come to expect against a team that are expected to be in and around that bottom half of the table when we play at home, especially. And that's not disrespectful to Watford. That's just the reality. That's just what you've been seeing the last 2 years for the Albion against the bottom half sides. What did you make of Watford in general, in terms of what you expect for their future in the Premier League to be? Because I watched a fair bit of that Villa game back and they looked electric. And today, well, yesterday, they looked very far from it. They were totally neutralized. In terms of their future, what do you think that looks like in that relegation battle that they're inevitably going to be a part of?
I don't know if we can. They were a different side coming out in the second half, right? They, you know, they still weren't, wouldn't say we feared them, but for the first 15-20 minutes in the second half, they looked better. They created some chances. You started to see more of the forward group. Who was the guy that they brought on who I thought made a real nice difference?
Cucho Hernandez.
Yeah.
Yep.
They looked a different side when he came in. The Villa game is a little bit of an anomaly in some senses, in that Villa looked a bit shell-shocked in that game, really, didn't they? And they came back into it. Danny Ings is Danny Ings. We saw his incredible goal this week. So I think they were handed that a little bit, Watford. There are worse looking sides in the first two games than Watford. If you take this the first half against us out of it, they will pick up points. They don't look as bad as some of the other relegation fodder, like, let's say, Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, they will pick up.
I'll throw it in.
Yeah, I mean, after what we just watched. But I think you're spot on. Like, there has to be a crowd element to that as well. In terms of first game, Vicarage Road, you know, the first Prem game of the season, there's that heightened atmosphere, and they've reacted to that. Some could say that that's also happened to us as well. First full Amex in a while. You know, we're completely up for the game, assured, confident, take our chances. You know, yeah, that's what happened. I think you're right. There are worse teams in this league than Watford. But from 2 years ago, when they did get relegated, they had an awful away record. And in order for that, you know, in order for that same fate not to happen to them this season, they do need to pick up points on the road. Because I think last year in the Championship, had one of the best defences, you know, home and away. I think home is probably their key to this year. But they do need to stop losing away from home. They need to pick up points in terms of, you know, where they wouldn't be expecting them, and go for, I wouldn't say, you know, pick up a point here and there, rather than, you know, have a dreadful away record. But that goes for every team that we're going to be vying against. So, you know, I think the main thing is the same with the other 14, should we call them, is win at home, draw away, and that's perfect. You know, you have to pick up those points on the road. And I think it will come down to that for Watford.
Well, there's also the fact that, do they keep hold of Sarr? So we've got
nine
days left.
Yeah.
If they sell him, they're in for a torrid time. And I know he didn't do much against us, but he really is their sort of far and away star player. And there's lots of rumours around him. And it'd be tempting potentially for them to cash in for a side that is looking to really put themselves over the top. I think they're putting the nail in their own coffin if they do that, though. So it'd be interesting few days to see if they keep hold of him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think keeping Sarr has to happen. It looks like they're already losing Will Hughes, and you saw how thin they looked in the central midfield yesterday. Chalobah apparently doesn't want to stay, another big mid-central midfield presence from last year. Yeah, I think they're going to be in big... I mean, if they sell Sarr, I think they're done. Like, I think that would be the difference. But there's been a couple of questions in the chat. I did want to get onto the individual players, obviously. But there's been a few questions already on individual players. Josh Gold, thoughts on Connolly? Surely he needs a good loan spell. He was the big man that missed that great chance in the second half. Had some good runs, you know, he run in behind, he ran well, like that's kind of like that Alex Gravel League One stuff, like he ran well, Craig McHale Smith stuff, like what do you two think about Connolly? For me, I've been saying it for the last couple of weeks, and just before the end of last season, I think it's an absolute shoo-in that he should go on loan if we bring in another striker, but now it's looking like we don't know where we're going to. So thoughts about Connolly?
How many times have we said what you've said there of, I'm saying Brighton fans as a whole, he missed that really good chance. I mean, that's sort of his specialty, isn't it, really? He sort of gets in these good positions, gets a nice ball forward, and it never finds the back of the net. And he does all the right things. Like you say, he sort of harries around, he shuttles around defenders. He puts in that same level of work rate that you see from Mope that makes him so special, which is closing down, getting us back on the front foot, intercepting, putting pressure on defence. But as we've all discussed, if that's all they're doing, you're not getting the goals out of the forward, then we need the goals from elsewhere. And that was our challenge last season. We didn't have those midfielders pushing in and necessarily just smacking them in from outside the box and whatnot. Maybe Nwepu changes that. Beside the point, maybe a run in the team, if Mope is out for a little bit, you'd hope he's back after the international break, might help him out. But I don't know what the question is, if he's the answer at the moment for what we've seen.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it, to be honest. I think you, in terms of, I don't think it's a confidence issue. Clearly, the guy has confidence in himself to, you know, put himself about and be that harrier, like you said, in terms of almost like a terrier up front and constantly running and constantly getting those.
I'm not shy of a fight, yeah, you could say.
But it's just my own personal gripe with him is that he does look for the foul one too many times, in terms of trying to almost in that Murray-esque sort of way, in terms of get us further up the pitch with a dead ball situation, when really he's got the pace in order to actually do it. He can get us up the pitch and a lot further, and he can hold it up. But I think in terms of what he's doing, you're right. Like you should be finishing those chances yesterday in terms of it coming towards you. And I think he just needs one of those to get that sort of spark back. Like I said, I don't think it's a confidence issue anyway. I think he's undeniably confident for a 21-year-old, but I think he just needs a run in the team, get a goal just to get him back in the black, shall we say, and start running with that. I think he's very much, he needs one to get going, and it's been a while since he's got that one.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions already, like a fair few questions in the chat about strikers and signings and like, what are we going to do? But I'm going to keep you on the hot seat, Craig.
Sure.
Is Gross too old and slow? From Rich Reed.
Nah, come on now.
I'm sorry, Rich. If anyone doesn't appreciate what Gross brings to that team, then they're sorely mistaken about what opinion they have. He's one of our best players. He provides three times as many assists as any other player in that Brighton team. And what he brings to the table far outweighs what he's less good at, because he is quality. I will die on the Gross hill.
I want to give Rich some credit, because he arguably is a bit, he is slow. He's not speedy, is he? But what I enjoyed yesterday was the home fans. He put in his first of 18 Cruyff turns quite early on in the game. And the cheer rang out at the Amex. It's like, we all know it's coming. We all know he's going to do it. And he still manages to beat the defender pretty much every time. It's just fantastic. You've got to think, this is Gross's best position, arguably, in his entire career, has been sort of in that deep-lying central midfielder role where he can dictate some of the play. He's playing right wing back. And I think I looked at some heat maps from yesterday about players where they are furthest up on the pitch. Gross was our furthest forward player for a lot of the game yesterday, because he pushed so far up on that right side when Trossard dropped a little bit further back. Like, if he can do that, obviously, we talked about it being a long season. If he can do it for this game and prove it time and time again, what an asset he is. And his pass selection and crossing ability is just second to none.
Yeah, I'm being a bit harsh. I mean, in terms of Gross, we know that he's not the fastest player in the world, right? But his technical know-how and the Cruyff turn 2 minutes into the game, like, Watford were doomed from that point anyway, because, you know, he done it three or four times yesterday. And like you said, the fans are cheering before it even happens, because we know it's going to happen. And we know the guy's going to get fooled, hook, line and sinker.
It's so good every time.
It is perfect. So if there is a compilation of every single Gross turn, please direct it my way, because I'll have that on repeat.
It's unreal, isn't it? And everybody already knows, the listener-wise, that I absolutely adore Gross as well. So I was kind of hoping one of you wouldn't, just to get some spice in there. But I think he's just the numbers speak for themselves. And the fact that he's been able to play just about anywhere in that midfield. I mean, there was a short piece of time where, and it's apt for you both being over here too, but there was a short piece of time last season where he basically operated him as like a deep-lying quarterback role almost. Like, his entire role was simply to pick up the ball next to Bissouma and just spray it wherever he wanted. Like, just look for a runner and pass it out. And to then revert to, like, move over to right wing back. And I was watching with a Watford friend of mine yesterday, and he was like, what formation are you playing? I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure it's three at the back, but I'm not sure where our right wing back is. And the ball went further up the pitch and panned up, and Gross was just miles up, pinning their fullback to just, like, all the way back onto their 18-yard line. Like, they had nothing to do. And, you know, he then picked up an assist yesterday as well. He led the way in key passes by a bajillion miles. You know, only Alexis McAllister came close. He was just unbelievable, and I think he was just superb. And I think whenever you've got him on set pieces and you've got Duffy back and Dunk and Webster, there's only so many times you can defend those three all at once.
Yeah, I think Alex put in the chat as well, I think, where Gross and Alana are probably the best footballing brains in the team. And I think that's exactly why he can play in that position, because he knows tactically exactly where he needs to be, when to overlap, when to pull back a little bit more. He's smart. And it's hard for a player probably to come in and change a role just because Potter's decided you're going to play there because you've got no one else. I think maybe another question to put around it, though, is what happens when we get Veltman and Lamptey back, two players that are capable of playing in that same position, especially Lamptey? We're starting Lamptey if he's fit. Then what do you do? Where do you put Gross in then? Because Bissouma is the first name on the team sheet. Lallana is, when fit, fantastic. Where does Gross go there? I think that's the other question.
And I think Nick asks it in a roundabout way as well, that considering we have 8 or 9 kind of central midfielders challenging for 3 slots, would you send any of them on loan this year? I think if we're going to, you've got to look at names like Caicedo. Seems like a sensible one to move out on loan if we keep Bissouma. I think we are very much on board with the Taylor Richards train. It seems that Potter is very much enamored with him as part of the setup. I anticipate he will probably play against Cardiff the full 90 minutes. Here's the one I've got. If I had to send 2 out on loan, Alzate would be the other one. And it just seems like he's great and he's obviously very talented, but it just seems like he can never quite get started and stay started within the squad. And I know a lot of people love Steven Alzate, so that's a controversial one, but he would be the other one that I would send out if I had to.
Well, you've got, obviously you've got Molumbi playing for the under 23s as well, fully expecting him to go out probably permanently at this rate. I think we're just sort of waiting for a potential suitor in that regard. And you've got Caicedo, who I think will probably be involved at some point against Cardiff, I'm hoping, just to see, you know, what he's about. But it's spot on. It's luxury in that middle park. And given what we saw with Bissouma and Lallana yesterday, I kind of feel a little bit for Nwepu, who's trying to get his feet, has obviously been brought in to be, you know, in that sort of pairing. We saw it not work in the first half for Burnley. And if Bissouma and Lallana keep on like this, Gross and Nwepu are not going to be in that centre mid, because those two controlled the game and they have the ability to control the game over and over again. So it's interesting. I think it's a very challenging one again for Potter. And I saw something, you know, on The Athletic as well around that, is just with regards to how do you manage, even with having people like Jakob Moda in there as well, and how do you keep these players happy when you can't guarantee them playing time? And I think it's more of a case of doing what Bissouma and Lallana have done, is not only not put a step wrong, but also thrive into that. And I can't see it changing if they continue performing in that way.
Yeah, well, I think we've... And Josh, what do you have against our South American central midfielders? I think you saw in the second half of the Watford game why it's good that we have so many of these players, because it enabled us to change tactically, probably to... We sort of ended up in a bit of a 4-5-1 for the most part, I felt like. And that was where we were able to bring Moda on and bring him back into the center of the park and just structure ourselves a little bit more sensibly for Watford's 45 attackers that they ended up bringing on at the end of the game. That's nice. This is a great conversation to have. We're spoiled for choice. Like, the depth that we have in there is awesome. And we know that with Alzate, he can play in lots of different positions if we do have injury issues. We know Lallana's going to get injured. It's a matter of it's when it happens, not if. I agree. Caicedo, it'd be great to see him go out and get some good experience at maybe a higher level in European football to get used to things. I love Jakob Moda. I do want to see more of him as well. But I think he'll keep Alzate around, but I could be proven very wrong here, but just the flexibility he has positionally. Yeah. And as we know with Potter, if we don't know where a player goes, he's going to go play at left wing back or right wing back invariably. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on. I mean, I think that it is a great, one of those cliche of like, it's a great problem to have. Like, it really is a great problem to have. And when you do have players that you know are going to get hurt, you know Lallana is not going to be fit 38 games in a season, you know Alzate seemingly is not going to be 100% fit all of the time. Bissouma is hopefully going to stay fit forever, but you know he's always going to be on the cusp of 5 yellows, 10 yellows. Like, that's 2-3 game bans that you're going to need to have someone step in. Like, it only takes, and we're looking at it, I think we're watching something like that play out in real time, because Veltman is going to be available for selection against Everton, and Shane Duffy has just came back and put 2 man of the match.
Cannot drop Duffy in.
And you're not dropping Duncan Webster.
Nope.
Do you drop Pascal Gross to put him back in at right wing back as a more natural right wing back? He's just been an unbelievable creator. I don't know. Everton are a very different prospect, of course, to Watford. They have some very good wing backs, or kind of just full backs, depending on what Rafa is going to do. But already that selection problem is going to start coming to a head, because Veltman was superb last year, wherever they asked him to play. The left side of the defense, great. Right side of the central defense, great. Right wing back, good. You know, we're going to be encountering that pretty quickly. In 2 weeks' time, the international break's over, and we're already watching Tarek Lamptey in training.
Yeah, which is amazing, because he changes the team even more. But I think we see Veltman back. I think just from a defensive standpoint against what Everton have on the wings, like you said, Veltman was our go-to last season when we were against, with all due respect, slightly superior opposition attacking-wise. And you probably then, albeit Gross has been fantastic, you probably opt for the wing-back that is a little bit more defensively sound. We'll see.
Yeah. Man of the match. There's a lot of players to talk about, honestly, and I feel like we've touched on a fair few of them already, but man of the match, the general consensus at the stadium, I know that they do the whole like sponsors man of the match and stuff like that, which is always a little bit of a weird one, because it's always the home team, which always made me laugh when I'd go away and like we'd beat up on a team like Walsall, where we won the title, and like this poor Walsall player is being named man of the match after being kicked for like 90 minutes. But Shane Duffy was the sponsors man of the match yesterday. In a lot of ways, it's tough to argue against it, just looking at the raw data of what he did. But from my perspective, I think Bissouma has just as good of an argument based on that first 45 minutes alone. It's, for me personally, possibly the best 45 minutes I've seen from an Albion player ever. He was that good. So to buck the trend of knowing I think Duffy was excellent anyway, I think I'm going to go with Bissouma as my kind of man of the match shout out.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I had Bissouma down in my notes just in terms of the way that he ran the game, but also just broke everything up. So they didn't even get a look in. We spoke about Webster earlier as well, just in terms of not man of the match, but I guess a special mention, if you like, just in terms of the way that he played, the different things that he brought to that team, both defensively and attacking wise, was, you know, that's the Webster that we know and love. And being put at right back for the first half of Burnley was hopefully just a blip. But it's nice to see Webster, you know, back at what he does best, and that's progressive yards, really good balls over the top, and an extra man in that attacking third. I thought what he did was great.
And I think to add to that, just to back up the Webster piece there, the Albion team had a lot of touches of the ball anyway, right? Like, we dominated possession. Adam Webster had 30 more touches than anyone else in that side. Like, he had 123 touches of the ball. Next up was Duffy at 92. So, like, he really was, like you just said, like, the Webster we know and love. He was back where he was happy playing and looked very much shades of Ben White running in that, like, making those runs from that right side. So, just to add on there, he was all over the place. He dominated the ball.
Yeah, it was Webster and Bissouma for me. It was hard to pick between them, but Bissouma was... I think the Webster performance was special because of how bad he was the game before. And he just looked like a completely different beast. And Bissouma was just, I mean, I said this to someone on Twitter, he's just an absolute Rolls Royce of a player. Like, if we keep hold of him for another year, you've got to just be thankful for that and enjoy the football, because he's turned into such a top tier player. And you look at some of the other big sides out there that don't necessarily have a player in his role. You think about Man City, who are still playing Fernandinho. Rodri hasn't been the answer. Like we talked, Liverpool has been rumored. Like he's so good. He was everywhere. He intercepted every ball. He made that goal for us as well.
Yeah, I mean that basically was an assist. Like I think he actually got given it in Fantasy Pro. I always love this because I always like going online afterwards and like stats bomb and everyone like posts random stats. Albion Analytics always loves a good random one. But there's a name we haven't talked about, and AA have brought it up. Alexis McAllister. They did a ranked against Brighton players yesterday. He had 33 pressures, 15 of them were successful, top in the side yesterday. 15 ball recoveries, top in the side yesterday. 6 touches in the opposition box, second most. 4 tackles and interceptions, second most. 4 shot creating actions, second most. He kind of had, on the eye test, a very quiet day. But when you look at those numbers, clearly he did an unbelievable job that he was asked to do by Potter. And part of that comes to what you were saying, Adam, is like he was kind of left out there to do a job on Saar. And I mean, looking at those numbers, he clearly did it unbelievably well.
And then some, yeah.
He was what the pressure that was generated on the right hand side allowed was that McAllister kept trickling back inside to the center of the pitch, and it meant he could get much more involved in the game. And you even saw in the second half, like when Watford were a little bit more on the front foot, the counter attacks would typically then involve him a little bit more. I think he also had the highest XG on the team too. He sometimes will take those shots outside of the box when given a chance. There were a couple of moments where in the first half we got the ball fed into the center of like into the opposition box, and he passed it. And I would love to see that change because as good as he was, I want to see him just take some shots because I think he's got it in him. We saw some amazing goals from him at the end of last season, obviously last week as well. Like there's more to come from him, I think.
You forget. I mean, with a performance like that yesterday, you do forget how young he is as well. Just in terms of what he does and what he brings to the team. And you know, by all means, you know, you say a quiet game, but obviously, the way that him and Trossard were working together in the 45 is overloading either side. Now, just because that didn't happen on the left side in that 45 minutes, we saw a lot more of Trossard and Gross doing it on the right side. But if we wanted to go down that left, it would have been March and McAllister, and they would have done exactly the same in that, you know, they have the ability and they are very good. And I think McAllister's shine really was in that second half where he did do some damage and had a lot of touches and bringing it forward and creating those chances. To Adam's point, that exact one in the second half where he just passed it one too many times to try and get Bissouma in. I think it was the first half, actually, just in terms of just ran out for Bissouma and he got crowded out. Again, you're 12, 13 yards away. We know you can hit the bottom corner. Just take a swipe at it. And in those areas, just better decision-making. But again, he's, what, 21, 22?
22, yeah.
Mad. Not only the quality in this team, but just the youth in there as well. In terms of just being able to nurture them and what Potter's doing, it's a great team. I look forward to seeing what they're going to do this season, especially McAllister, because he does look different compared to last season, especially the start of last season.
Hopefully the one South American attacker or midfielder that Josh is okay with not sending out.
Yeah, I would like to keep him just for now. No, I thought he was great. I mean, it's similar to the Trossard story, just a year delayed. You can tell when he came out yesterday, you could see like he's put some weight on, good weight. And it was Trossard for me last year was quite funny because he went from looking like this little boy almost the year before to having like arms the size of his neck. Like his biceps were huge. And I was like, shit, like he's been on the weight training. Like he knows like that's where he needs to get better. At Premier League level, that you know, these defenders, when you're going up against teams like Burnley and Watford, like they're big boys back there, and you need to be able to hold your own. And Maka looks that way this year. I think he looks like he's put on good weight. He's clearly kept his stamina, and he looks like he's just about starting to really adapt to the Premier League. And I mean, it's also worth noting he came from Boca, right? Like he came from Argentina, which is he didn't even get the Euro experience, right? He didn't even get to go over to Belgium or, you know, wherever we're going to throw people for a year. Like, he didn't even get that. Like, he had to come straight over and learn immediately. And yeah, it took a while, but, and I think Mwepu might fit into that too. I think that we're going to try and introduce him as much as we can, but I think we're probably going to start seeing the best of him come 2022. Some people would be sad to hear it, but I think that it is going to take that long for him to get up to that speed, the Premier League speed.
I felt bad for him in the coming on in that second half when basically we were pretty much setting out to sit back. And then that obviously requires a lot of rigidity, knowing the system, knowing where to be, knowing who's gonna be elsewhere around you. And you saw him a few times where you're just like, he's not completely assured just yet, which is to be expected. So, but I felt like he was sort of thrown into a bit of an awkward position yesterday, whereas we could have maybe brought on an Alzate or someone else to shore things up a little bit better. But I agree. He had that one shot in the second half where, like, if he was a little bit more comfortable, that could have actually probably tested the keeper. I think what we're seeing, though, the pattern with all of what Potter's trying to do, we talked about this with Gross, Mwepu with the sort of this moniker of the computer. We're getting these smart football intelligent players that we know are going to be capable of understanding Potter's system at some point. You're probably right. This season might be too soon for him, but it's going to be exciting to see how he fits in with everyone else in the coming months.
Yeah, agreed. Moving on from Watford, obviously, like we've said 100 times, like, there could be a better start, like 6 points from 6.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We don't have an opposition view on this week, but we do have 2 games this week. And I promise we are going to touch on the transfer window because it just keeps comments coming in asking questions. So
can I bring up one thing before we talk about the next games? And that's, I want to talk about Robert Sanchez. Because if there's been one question mark, he's not looked very comfortable the first 2 games. Is there any thoughts on why that is or what's happened? Especially someone who called up to the Spain national team for the Euros as well. I know he didn't play, but...
It's a really good point, I think, in terms of, you know, watching him first half in Burnley and yesterday. He didn't have a lot to do, but when he was called upon, it wasn't with aplomb or like the normal Robert Sanchez that we expect. He did flap at a couple of things. There was some miscommunications with Duffy. I'm not going to read into that like too much, but in terms of a late call here and there, flapping at a corner that comes across. Obviously he made a smart stay from Cleverley, but you know, that's routine for the expectations that we have of him. So I think you're right. It's spot on. I don't know whether he's not 100% yet or in terms of what's going on. But he hasn't filled me with the usual confidence that he normally does.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too. I think he's still, again, super young as well. I think it's going to take him, it may be a little bit like Webster. He may take a game or two to get back up to speed. And he had a lot going on, probably emotionally, being in the Spain squad and like getting that kind of call up so early. Maybe that kind of got to his head. I don't know. But his distribution yesterday and Burnley was very concerning. That's one of his big plus points. And, you know, we were lucky not to concede when he kind of pinged it out straight to Cleverley's feet. Thank God that we have such a good back line because they kind of snuffed it out immediately, which was very much the opposite of Trista Kong and Cavaselli. They just kind of let Neil wander on through, but it was worrying. And there was a few times there where he kind of just resorted to hammering it upfield as hard as he could. And that, like you said, that wasn't the Robert Sanchez we know and love. Not too concerned just yet, but if he continues with it and maybe commits some kind of howler next week, then we may be in a bit of trouble. I'm not sure.
Well, you might just need the saves as well. And some, as you say, get up to speed. Like, Watford didn't do anything against him in the first half. I mean, Burnley aren't exactly filled with a wealth of sort of attacking talent, are they? So I know they had a few chances, but maybe he just needs some shots thrown at him. But I think, as you said, that he was brought into this team, one, because he's big, and two, because he's good with his feet, and he's had some dodgy touches so far. But
there was a rogue goal kick at Burnley, wasn't there? In terms of what happened there was a time yesterday where his first touch let him down, had to put it out into touch. You know, those are, you know, they're not howlers by any means, but you know, it, if you have that in you, then it will cost us at some point. I'm not going to get concerned about it right now. I think he just needs a couple of games and needs to get back into that sort of match form. But it is a very good observation that I don't think he's started as well as maybe we were expecting.
Yeah, I agree.
He says as we've conceded one goal in two games, but you know,
from a fantasy football standpoint this week, he was absolutely amazing. Well,
One more call out was another dunk chest back to Sanchez. Just want to, you know, we haven't talked about dunk at all on this podcast, but he makes every other centre back he plays with a better player. Full stop.
Yep.
100%. And I think poor Ben is seeing that in real time when he's going next to Mary and Holding and whatever other chat.
Well, when he plays.
Well, when he's not got COVID, he's seeing it happen. Don't want to spend too much time on Cardiff because, at least personally, I'm suspecting we're going to be playing a very weak squad. We have plenty of. I wouldn't be surprised if the majority of the people that were on the bench this week that didn't play will play. We'll be playing a backup goalkeeper. It may well be a good idea as to what players might not figure at Everton. You know, Pascal Gross makes an appearance tomorrow. Maybe not. Veltman, if he plays tomorrow, lengthy, is he just trying to get in minutes or is he thinking he's not quite ready yet? We'll give it to after the break. The League Cup is a weird one because it's clearly not as prestigious as the FA Cup. We all saw the excitement when we got to the semi-final. Even under Houghton, and we knew it was kind of a losing game. We weren't going to get anything from Manchester City, even though we did a good job. We game-planned them pretty well. But the League Cup, for me, it's just never really been a thing. Like, would I like us to win it? Of course I would. I'd go wild. Like, I'd go mental if we won a trophy at any point. But at this point in time, we've just won 2 from 2. Would you want to see a mixed 11 out there of first-team starters, or would you be fine with us taking the risk of playing 11 players that probably aren't going to figure on Saturday?
My opinion, I don't care about the League Cup. Who's sponsoring it? Carabao nowadays?
Carabao, yes.
so prestigious. No, I mean, I think we've talked about depth, and I think what separates the sides in the Premier League now that we're seeing with the financial might of others is the squad depth that you have, where you've got sides in the top six, top eight of the league that can basically just put out another Premier League standard squad if they rested 6-7 plus players. We don't have that luxury apart from in centre midfield. I would much rather the focus be on committing to the league, committing to get as high up the table as possible so we can attract the best talent, knowing that we're probably going to lose someone like Bissouma next season, making sure that we're not seen as a relegation fighting club and we're seen as getting towards that mid-table position. I don't think we've got the depth there yet, especially up front, like we've talked about, to be, you know, fighting in three different tournaments.
Yeah, fully agree. I'm expecting, the Alzates, the Caicedos, the, you know, stealing goal, a couple of guys from the under-23s. Veltman, probably, maybe just to get minutes. You know, I wouldn't expect him to play the entire game, but, you know, just to get some of that sort of match fitness back, that would be nice. But yeah, I think we're all in. I think it's pretty unanimous that the focus here is not on the Carabao Cup. I think that you're right. The top six and the Man Cities and the Chelseas, you know, their second strength team is, you know, going to go very far in that. And if they win it, then, you know, it's another one to add to their trophy cabinet. But for the lower, I guess the lower Prem teams, I think it's very much low on the priority list. And I think that's why you maybe saw Brentford go all the way to the semis last year, in terms of a team that is going to take it seriously, doing really well at the top of the championship. You know, they get that winning run going and they go very far because the teams you're coming up against aren't exactly full strength.
Was also think about the momentum. It doesn't mean we can't play quality players in this game, but think about the momentum if we were managed to go to Everton and get 3 points there. We go into a break with 9 points. That is a hell of a a boost and a hell of a place to be, as opposed to, let's say, us putting out a full strength squad for the Carabao and then us being in slightly worse shape for Everton. Like,
but not- I think on the other hand, you know, if you're talking momentum, do you want to win the Cardiff game so that you go in with three wins
sure.
on the
ground? Yeah,
so it's fair. You know, I think it's fairly black and white here. You either you go for it and you go and win that game with the momentum behind you to go into Everton at home, or you completely disregard it. I don't think there's any half-arsing here around, oh, well, we'll play some of the first team and then try and get away with playing some of the under-23s. It's very much you either go to win there and win there with a full-strength side, or you disregard it as a secondary tournament and focus on Everton at the weekend.
Speaking of Everton, we are actually at home, so we don't even have to go up there.
We are, yeah.
And Craig, you brought it up, the fans being back, right, and the home advantage. And we've actually seen it bear fruit, right, the last couple of weeks, because we've actually only had one team. So every team has played at home now once. It was they did a full reverse like the first 2 weeks. Every team has now played one home game. And only Burnley lost their first home game of the season. Every other team picked up points at home. Clearly, oh, that's not true. Norwich as well. Norwich and Burnley.
Norwich don't count.
That's how I feel. I said that yesterday as well, and someone else was like, oh, you forgot Norwich. And I was like, who? And so clearly the home advantage is very much a thing, like looking at it early days. Fans are back. Everybody's very happy. How long do you think that lasts for the league in general? And, you know, do you think that plays a part in Everton coming to visit? They've got 4 points from six. They're unbeaten too. They've done pretty well. What do you think?
I think it's important. So maybe this is a bit of a questionable thing to say. And I don't know if Josh, I'll leave my controversial opinion until now. Maybe it was the coverage. I'll blame the coverage if everyone hates me for saying this, but I thought the Amex could have been louder yesterday. And I would like to have actually seen more of an atmosphere, which is crazy to say, considering I know it was bustling. I know the performance we put in the first half was incredible. But I would like to see it a little bit louder. I do think it's important. It goes back to that momentum piece though, right? As in, if we're suddenly on a winning spree, which we are now, everyone's going to get a little bit more excited, a little bit more tense around things. And that would build up the atmosphere. I think the other side of it, though, is what we talked about before, is that when does it change? When you go on those little runs, which we know will happen, where we get a few draws in, we lose a couple of games, and the crowd can get a little bit more on the other side. You know, they're seeing it at the Emirates, where people are just going to be a little bit more on you, and that can have the opposite effect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I expect it to, you know, continue for a while at least, just in terms of the novelty factor and being able to go to games again, and there's just that feel good factor in terms of what we're doing. But you bang on in terms of, you know, when does it get to the point where, you know, your expectations are mismatched and you know, you go on a little bit of a barren run, and you know, there's more of a an anxiety in the crowd rather than an anticipation of a you know, a good performance and a good result. So I think I fully expect it to continue, you know, into the international break, a couple of games after. If we continue pulling out good performances and we keep going, or if something does take a turn and we're not getting the results that maybe either we've played well for or we've just played badly, I think people are going to be a lot more nervous this year because they haven't been to games in a long time, and you're feeling that firsthand again. It's interesting. That's a very long-winded way of saying I have no idea. But in terms of just finding our feet, you know, especially as a crowd and bits and pieces, obviously get behind the team 100% and stuff. But like you said, you go 5-6 home games, maybe without a win, it then becomes very difficult to pick that back up.
Well, we just got to hope the novelty wears off around September 27th before we play away at Palace. That would be nice.
Yes,
already got one eye on that one as well.
Yeah.
Although for us, it's a Monday afternoon.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. It will be.
Calvert-Lewin hit the ground running already. 2 goals from 2. Everton are an interesting side, and I think that a lot of casuals and neutrals are probably looking at this game in the same way as I'm looking at Everton. I don't know who Everton are yet. They beat Southampton at home, a team that we've seen have just been pillaged by other teams, and then they drew with Leeds away, a team that are notoriously awful defensively. What are Everton this year? Like, we don't know. We've had the big drama with Guilfi, obviously. We've got some of their players spreading huge anti-vax conspiracies online. Fabian Delph, big up. And then you've got two results that, to me, don't really tell me anything about what their season's going to look like. And now they're coming to play us. And I think a lot of the neutrals probably have the same feeling about us as I'm feeling about Everton. They beat Burnley away and they beat Watford. Okay, like, what does that, like, what does that tell me about Brighton? And I can get it. Like, I don't know either yet. So, you know, Calvert-Lewin scoring goals already. He's going to be a worry. Damari Gray is starting games all the time. Richarlison, yep, fit, ready to go. They've got some good fullbacks in Digne and Coleman. What are your thoughts on it? Because I've already said, I don't bloody know. I haven't got a clue what we're going to look at on Saturday. So what are you two feeling?
I don't think the Everton fans know. And if you going back to the other question, is like, oh, how long does this novelty wear off with fans at stadiums and potentially turning of the tide? I mean, there's the Rafa Benitez factor there as well. Tell you what, if they lose a couple of games, you know what's going to happen there. But for them coming to us, I mean, so I watched their game yesterday against Leeds. They're a very weird side. And my worry is always with, I think Richarlison's a smart player. He's a danger. He'll take a random pot shot. Obviously, you talked about Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They have a nice, I guess, smooth attack in terms of how they can develop play. I really rate Ducore as well, sitting back there with Allen in the sort of defensive midfielding spots and creating play. Tell you where they are very, very questionable, and that's right through the spine, right at the back, with Pickford's, depending on how your opinion is on Pickford, but Keane and Yerry Mina are so questionable. I mean, you're not going to be putting in crosses into the box to go for headers, but you can pass around those guys real easy. And that's where you'd want Mope. But maybe this is where Connolly can shine and get his goal.
I think, yeah, I'm with both of you in terms of, I don't know. But I do know that they're on edge with everything surrounding their club, whether it's in the media or whether it's a manager that's gone to the other side of Merseyside. So in terms of, you know, when they do have a couple of bad results, the manager is going to be the first one they're going to blame, because it's such an easy scapegoat for fans in terms of jumping on that bandwagon. So that, I mean, in terms of our game itself, I think you're right. Their results don't really tell us too much at this moment in time. Good home win, nice away win. In hindsight, it will be, I think, against Leeds. But in terms of what we're seeing from them, there's no pattern yet. So I think it may well be up to us to play our game, especially if we're at home and the fans are behind us, that we play our game and they have to play to ours rather than trying to figure out what they're going to do. I think we're in that position now with the confidence, especially these last two results, where we can play our own game and get them to react to us. And that's what I'm hoping will happen. But we'll see. It's going to be a good game. And I think we have the ability and the confidence to take the game to them. I think it's also good to point out that they do have Huddersfield away in the cup as well on Tuesday. So you're talking about the mentality towards the Carabao Cup. I think us more likely to completely disregard this as a secondary tournament, focus on the league. For Everton, it's a very viable cup for them to win, given the position they're in and the players that they do have. So whether they do go full strength on Tuesday may have an impact on who isn't available on Saturday. Just in terms of what they do on Tuesday, we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's helpful, isn't it, that they're not playing a Forest Green or a Northampton Town. Like, they've actually got to go to a championship side and put in some effort if they want to get anywhere, which is helpful for us. I think it's a good call out. Score predictions. I always ask the opposition view for a score prediction, so let's just do it ourselves without them this week. But for me, I'm going to go with 2-1 to us. And I genuinely think we're going to, I can't believe I'm saying it, that I think we're going to go 9 from 9, but I really think we're going to. And I'm going to go with 2-1.
Am I meant to try and be accurate or popular? I think both teams concede. I could see it being a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I think you talk about Yerry Mina and you talk about Michael Keane, especially, you know, set pieces. Last year, they destroyed us with set pieces. I don't really know what happened. But it, in terms of their aerial presence, I can see them scoring. But I think I'm with you, Josh. I think that's 2-1. I think we've got enough to cause some problems, it, predominantly around whether Morpay's okay or not. I think with Connolly up against Yerry Mina and Keane, as long as we get those balls into the box that Solly March was starting to put in against Watford, those low balls around the 6-yard area, that's Connolly's, you know, lunch and dinner. So hopefully we can cause them some problems from a speed perspective. But I'm going to go for 2-1 as well. I'll be optimistic.
I want to be wrong here, but I also do like the idea that, you know, Luca Dean's very good going forward at left back. But if we do what we just did against Watford in the first half, let's push down on the right hand side, he can fall apart a little bit there and we can get some balls into the box. So I would love to be wrong.
I mean, I would also take a point. Like, 7 points from 9, start the season. Yes, thanks. Cool.
Yeah.
That works for me. Like, I would be perfectly happy with a point because we got points I didn't expect from Burnley in the first place.
Yeah.
I fully expected a draw there.
I'm just riding this optimistic wave, and I'm not going to stop until I'm brought horribly back down to earth. So we'll see. I mean, yeah, like you said, if we line up and we dictate the game, especially tactically, I just think there's less of a chance of that happening against a manager like Rafa Benitez.
Well, there is the fact that if there are also going to be transfers that potentially occur. I know this game happens on the 28th, right? Yeah. There's a chance some movement has happened on both sides. Everton are looking at moving some players around. We're obviously rumoured. So we'll see. We might be not comparing the same two squads that we're talking about right now and making predictions around.
It's true. And that's always the thing that throws you off, doesn't it? For this first 3 games of the season, the transfer window still being open. If Bissouma gets a £100 million offer from PSG tomorrow, like, I'm probably not as confident about a 2-1 win.
The way he's playing, they can keep their fucking money, to be honest. Excuse my French. It would be French in this regard. Yeah,
I agree with you. Honestly, he is at this point priceless for what we could do this season, I think. Transfer window. Just to wrap on the window, we've got a lot of questions in here, actually, of different thoughts, feelings. Obviously, the Connolly one was up there already. The striker story continues. If Mopay is injured on top of Tau and Andon going out at the door, do you think that would push the board even more to get a striker in? Going into the season, once the window closes with Connolly and Zakiri as the only fit strikers, is pretty concerning. If Mope is more weeks and days, which would be opposite of what Potter said, but this is Brighton and we know how that goes. So
I think it does impact things, but at the same time, I also don't think that our want for a striker is the problem. It's the ability for us to get one that is the problem. So we could be even more desperate, and that might not make a difference. And also, just a bizarre side note, I threw you off on the Andone pronunciation. I looked up the Romanian pronunciation, and it is Andone, even without the accent on the E. So who knew?
Well, what do you know?
he's gone, right? We saw Alexis McAllister basically give that goodbye picture last night, saying, you know, good luck and whatnot. And he's going to play him. We're a Deportivo now, the third division of Spain. We anticipate.
It's Cadiz now.
You're going Cadiz. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
A weird one in terms of, obviously, it's a loan to buy, but it sounds like they have to buy him. I mean, I'm just looking. Yeah, in terms of what I'm, again, rumor mill, so nothing's confirmed, but it's looking likely he's going to leave, with McAllister basically confirming it. But I always thought that the third division was a little bit off. It sounds like he'll be plying it at the bottom of La Liga, which is to be expected, someone of his caliber.
Well, I'm glad if the rumor is correct and it is that they're forced to buy, that's good, because we don't want to see him get injured and then suddenly we get him back on the books again. Wonderful. I think Darwin Nunez is the name that keeps cropping up. I would love to see that happen. I don't see it happening. But he's also out injured at the moment. I don't know how long that injury is going to be.
He came back on the bench this weekend.
He's back on the bench. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't play, obviously, but he was on the bench yesterday against whoever it was Benfica were playing in the league. So he is back, at least what they consider to be match fit, unless it was just posturing.
Maybe. Well, they've got a wealth of forward options right now, Benfica, which is probably how this even came about in the first place. I know we were really in for him before he made that move there. That would be nice to happen. The other ones, we've had the rumors about Reece Nelson, not really an out and out option for us, but I don't know. I think they're still going to try and get someone in. The problem that we talked about between us before as well is, can we, who is currently trying to sell a potential 15 goal Premier League striker at the moment for the money that we can put out there? If you know, let me know.
I think it expands to most transfer targets right now in this current climate, where there is uncertainty and you do have to think about that human element. And, you know, I'm inevitably looking towards Cucurella in that position as well, who now has a newborn and is, you know, do you want to uproot your family when something or a life event of that magnitude has then happened? And, you know, you got to think of someone like Nunez at 22 years old, has moved from Spain to Portugal, you know, just got settled after a year. Does he want to uproot in this current climate to come to a team? So it's not, half of it is around, okay, do you want to come and play for this club? But also the other half is, well, do you want to uproot everything and move to a UK city to then ply your trade, especially at the moment where things are closing and opening and nobody knows whether you can go home or not. We're fully aware of that. So in terms of just being able to do it, not to go too deep into that, but there's, you know, can we attract someone of that quality that we need? And are they willing to do that? But also, are they willing to do that at that current climate and this point in time?
Yeah. Well, that was the Nunez problem last time as well, right? He's like, I don't know enough about Brighton. I want to move to Benfica. And there's a chance he plays in the Champions. They're one game away from playing the Champions League, right? So that against PSV, they have the second leg next week.
Is it this week? I think it's this week.
This coming week, yeah.
It has to be, because the international breaks next week. So, yeah.
And they're 2-1 up, I believe. So,
but they do have to go to PSV, though.
Yeah.
So it really is up in the air. They've got a one-goal lead, but PSV have the away goal. Although, is away goals even a thing anymore? Weren't they taking that away?
Didn't they take it? Oh, I don't even know at this point. But I think you're right. Like, if you're him, do you go, let's say they get through, I've got a chance at playing, albeit maybe off the bench for a Champions League side, or I go play for Brighton. I don't know. I just.
Or just in terms of, Potter's not going to go over to Darwin Nunez and say, you're going to start every game, because Morpé's just scored 2-2. And if he's not injured, he's probably playing. Otherwise, you're going to cause another scene at the training ground. But in terms of what you're seeing there is, you know, can we bring someone in at that caliber? But do they have the right mentality to say, right, well, you know, you've come in for big money, but you still need to fight for your place and you still need to provide the goods. Otherwise, we do have Neil Morpé and we do have Danny Welbeck that we can play instead.
Oh, if you buy Nunez, he starts for me. Like,
I think you've got to, ain't you?
Therein lies the problem, doesn't it? In terms of, you know, you've got a striker that is currently 2-2. If he's not injured, you know, I can personally see 10, 15 goals out of him. It's just his consistency. You're talking about Darwin Nunez, who didn't have that consistency last season at Benfica and had, from Benfica's point of view, a questionable season given the heightened attention around his transfer. Yeah. So, you know, you can see similarities in those. You know, they've got the talent to be it, but they haven't shown it just quite yet at the highest level. I wouldn't want to be Graham Potter, both in the midfield scenario and trying to select £80 million worth of midfielders in two spots. But also, I wouldn't want to make that decision and have those conversations. I would be horrible as a football manager, to be honest.
I don't think anyone would want to take over from Potter at the moment, really. Like, what was the other thing with Tony Bloom, the results of fans who support their owners and chairman at the moment? We were second in the league, right, with Tony Bloom. I still don't understand how 5% of people said no. Why do they not want Tony Bloom? What are they
Madness.
On?
Madness. To go off the striker thing, because I think that's just going to run until the end of the window. And I'm sure we'll talk about it loads next week, because I feel like we're just not going to stop talking about it until it's done. Cucurella does seem to be like a very much a name in and out there. It seems that he is now aggying for a move over there. He's not training. He's not happy. He wants to leave. They reiterated, if you want him, pay the release fee. But wingbacks, interesting one from Justin. Kolbovny, what are we going to do with this fella? He's a wingback who can't make the squad despite our clear shortages in that position, and that's a concern. It's a good point. I expect to see him play against Cardiff, but, you know, this is supposed to be a left or right wingback. He's played both. He's supposed to be this up-and-coming prospect. He's playing for his national team. And he can't even get onto an expanded bench of nine in the Premier League when we don't have any other wingbacks. What, like, to me, I think if he isn't good enough, just cut loose now. Like, let's just get it done with. But if he is, why aren't we seeing more of him? It's a weird one.
I think there's some elements of. Yeah, you're right about a lot of that. But at the same time, what we talked about throughout this whole thing is the depth that's needed for the inevitable or the things that you don't think are going to happen. Let's say Solly March gets injured and we still have issues with Lamptey and Byrne and someone else goes out and is a red card for a game. You need to have that depth there. You need to have someone that can come in and do a job, but they don't necessarily need to be in the game day squad every single week, but we need to have bodies there, people that are actually able to fit into the system because they've been training in it week in and week out. I guess that's my thoughts on it. It's going to be a long season. We might not be saying it, you know, 22 games into this, oh, he's not even in the match day squad, because a lot can happen at that point.
Yeah. I think in terms of just having him around and available, you know, obviously him and Moda are, you know, playing in the same national team, and it's nice to have somebody else maybe that you've known from previous and those sort of bits and pieces. But he was also given the number six shirt. So in terms of just, I don't want to read into that too much because numbers are just numbers, but in terms of if you're going to have someone and you name him in your 25-man squad, Tau aside, who's looking likely to go, but I think you're right in terms of, you know, you see one or two injuries in those wingback areas and then all of a sudden you're relying on your Alzates and your Kupovniks. So you need to have them around. All comes back to that player management again from the manager in terms of, okay, let's set the expectations for him. You're 20 and a half years old. You got here like a season and a half ago. You need to, you know, be comfortable in your surroundings and be comfortable with the players you're working with. You know, it may just be that he needs time. And if we, you know, if we throw him into the team and start giving him some significant game time, you know, he could either shine or he could crumble. And I think I entrust Potter in terms of he's doing the right thing for him in particular. It'll be interesting to see if he does get some game time, maybe similar to Sanchez, where we get halfway through the season and we say, right, you are ready. You're going to get some game time. And then just see what happens there.
The other thing is exactly what we sort of talked about before. We go to the La Liga offices with a suitcase of money and we get Cucurella and he gets shipped out. Like, a lot can happen in the next 9 days that affects that position. So there's that piece too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the next time we talk, I'm sure there'll be a lot of movements, not just... Well, hopefully for us in terms of ins, not a lot of outs, please. But also just around the league too, in terms of what we're going to see. You know, I just mentioned Tau in terms of going to the Egyptian league. That's likely to happen in the next week or so. I think he's going to join at the end of the season. The Egyptian league finishes on the 27th. So very likely to go this window. And then we talked about Malumbi as well. Reda Kadra as well, in terms of had that Blackburn loan put on ice. Again, fueling some rumours around somebody else like a Rhys Nelson coming in so that we get a winger in so that we can get one out. I think we're going to see a lot of that, as what Adam said, in terms of, okay, let's get a wing back in so the wing bang has to go out. You know, you just...
It's a big domino effect.
Yeah.
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 And Paul Barber loves talking about domino effects. I feel like he always does that. In all those fan forums, he's like, well, we need to wait on, the big money moves, and then there's a domino effect. He loves it. But for me, that's all I had. I mean, you knew the agenda. I would say that we're at the end of the structured agenda. If you have anything else, speak now.
I don't have anything in particular. I listened to, I don't know if you guys heard the Tony Bloom podcast from the Leader Sports Business. I think it just came to fruition, or it was recorded earlier this summer. I don't want to plug another podcast. This is the only podcast you have to listen to. But in terms of the one that they had with Tony Bloom, is a good 45-minute interview just around him owning a football company and how you run things and how you have to trust the people that you employ, et cetera. And just spoke about his high moments, spoke about his low moments, how he could have handled some certain things better from a Brighton perspective. I did find it a good listen. We can link it on social media and stuff. But I thought that was quite refreshing to hear from someone that is a chairman of a football company talk that openly about maybe not only the things that he'd like, but also the things he could have got done better from a Brighton perspective.
You can't say football company. I know it's got capitalist at this point, but we've still got to say club. I'm kidding. Yeah. It's
we're all customers, Adam.
Yeah, exactly. We're the consumers of Brighton. I'll say two very quick things. The first is I just see a thing come out on Twitter saying Man United's Paul Pogba is the joint most assists in the Premier League in the year of 2021. He is equal in the number one position is Pascal Gross. So he is not too old or slow, seemingly. he has 8 assists in 2021. And the other thing I'd say to the people, and I might be seeing thunder here, Josh, that our listeners that are also based in the US like we are, go follow Stateside Seagulls if you haven't. They're doing some awesome stuff. And put out good content.
Yeah, agreed. That's all I got. If you're good, I'm good. We'll see you all next week. We've got two games to cover next week, although one may well be a little bit just depending on what lineup we throw out there. And if we were to go ahead and beat Everton, I suspect we won't cover Cardiff much at all because we'll be too excited to talk about 9 from 9. So, thank you all for listening. We will be back next week for episode 139. And then we've got the big one, a couple of days of the transfer window, and it is slamming shut. And then we'll have the international break covering all of that. Hopefully it's very busy for us, but we'll see.
Awesome. Thanks very much, boys. And speak to you soon.
Cheers all.
Cool. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.